want to express specific thanks to Don Martin, who taught for the last 2 weeks. It is nice to have someone who can teach. We're about to lose most of my, not all, but most of the regular substitutes we have, and so we will be trying out a few as the next few months go by. For those of you who are visiting, we are going through the Bible a little at a time. We have made it to 2 Samuel, so I would invite you to turn to 2 Samuel chapter 13. Since it's been a couple of weeks, let me take a step back and get a running start on what we're going to do today. We left off in 2 Samuel 12 with the story of David and Bathsheba. David had sinned by having relationships with Bathsheba, who was married to one of his close associates. When she became pregnant because of this, he then tried his best to fix that, but none of the steps that he took worked, so he ended up having her husband killed, took her into his family, and then was confronted by Nathan the prophet. The consequence of that, the second half of chapter 12, the child died. And what I want to ask you was, what did David do as the child was lingering? Do you remember? He grieved, he prayed, he did everything. And when the child died, his advisors, his counselors, his attendants said, "We can't possibly tell him that the child had died. Look how distraught he is. Look how far he's gone," simply because the child was sick. But at the end, he figured it out. And what did he do? He got up, cleaned himself up, and went back to work. And his counselor said, "Wait a minute, what's going on?" And this was another one of those times when David's behavior seemed to be different from what was expected. What did David say?
"I can't bring him back."
Until he died, God might have changed his mind. But once he died, then God had spoken, and I have to accept what God said. Very interesting reaction. Now, we left off at verse 25 in 2 Samuel 12, so we pick up with verse 26, in chapter 12. We're going to treat this very, very quickly. Basically, remember, the army had gone out to fight. David had stayed home, and that was not the usual function. It talks about in the time of the year when the kings went out to war, David didn't go out to war. He sent his army with him. So the army's been off battling. Who have they been battling? It turns out this is important later. So let's make sure we see that. Who have they been battling? The Ammonites, but there's a very interesting name. What's the name? I'm looking at verse 26. Mine says Joab, that is Joab and the army, assaulted a place. Rabbah of the Ammonites. That's the name of the place. Okay, I'd like you to just find a place and hang that name somewhere where you can retrieve it a week or two from now, or maybe later today. Okay, that seems to have been the royal town, right? And Joab sends messengers to David. "I've assaulted this place. I've captured the water supply. We're about to finish the process. You better get here. Because if you're not here, the glory for capturing this place is going to go to me. And the glory for capturing a place needs to go to the king. There's a place you need to be. Get yourself out here." And David does. That campaign is finished. And we come to chapter 13. There's a sense in which old cliches work. Because in a couple of words, they convey a great deep pattern. If I say the other shoe dropped, you all understand what I'm talking about, I think. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 13, the other shoe drops. Something's been going on all through here. Bible has made almost no mention of it, but it's there. And that is, you're hearing about all of David's children, mostly sons. But you never hear anything of David interacting with them. What's happening in David's family as all of this is coming through? There's a good chance Bathsheba was about the same age as some of his older children. All the backdrop here is that David seems to be a hands-off kind of guy. How about David's wife? How's she been doing with those children of hers?
Which one?
Fight me on this. You've been here. Fight me on this. What's the proper response? Rita says, which one? How many were there? The first six kids had six different mamas. He had six wives by that point. He then has a whole bunch more, plus a whole bunch of ladies that are identified as concubines, right? And he's got children out of his ears. How much attention is he paying to them? According to the Bible record, we cannot tell, but the hint is, because of the Bible silence, he's not paying much attention at all. So for the first time in chapter 13, you suddenly get a glimpse of the kids. And it ain't a good glimpse. Your job was to read the rest of 2 Samuel. You've had 2 weeks to do that. How did you do? Did you get this done? Okay. You're sitting close to Brody, so when you do, just put your fingers in his ears at the appropriate places. I can't tell how old you are. Maybe we'll need to do that for you as well, sir. What happens? The first thing you see in chapter 13, verse 1, it says, after this. And I'm taking after this to mean, okay, all of that turmoil having to do with Bathsheba and the death of that child, that has all settled down. That's receded a little into memory. The capture of this center of power in Ammon, the Ammonites, that's over with. Things are kind of settling down. And against that backdrop, mine says, after this, the following events took place. Is that what yours says? What does it say, Paul?
It says in the course of time, and then it starts.
Yours just says in the course of time. Mine says after this, the following events took place. And I'd like to have a little bit of a timeline here. I don't know. I just wrote, the troubles begin. And the first piece, I've got, I think, 7 points along this road. The first point, if you want a catchy title, is lust turns to loathing among David's children. After this, the following events took place. Absalom, son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. Did he have other sisters who weren't beautiful? We don't know. But he did have a sister who was beautiful, and what was her name?
Tamar.
Okay? And it, still in verse 1, it says Amnon. Now that's not Ammon. That's not the Ammonites. There's an N in place of an M in the middle of this name. Ammon, the son of David, my translation says, fell in love with her.
Love.
Yours just says loved her. Okay? Is that true? Based on what follows this. If you have not read it, you have no idea. No. What did he do? He fell in lust with her. I heard my mother say that one time, speaking of something that was happening in our town. So-and-so fell in lust with her. It says he loved her. And then verse 2, I think, gets closer to the right verb. And so I need to know what your verb is in verse 2. Amnon was so obsessed with his sister.
Frustrated.
Tamar. Yours says frustrated.
Upset.
Tormented. Tormented comes close. Obsessed, I think, is powerful. Frustrated has a place. Upset, I don't know that really catches anything.
How about vexed?
Vexed, maybe. But I think obsessed, frustrated, and what was yours?
Tormented.
Tormented is pretty good. Okay? He was obsessed. It says with his sister, Tamar. Is she his sister?
No.
What is she? His half-sister, right? Because she was...
Mine says half-sister.
Yours says that. See, some translations get this. Okay. Where was Absalom in the order of sons?
Born.
He was firstborn for that woman. What was he in the order of children? He was the third. There's Amnon, and then there's another one whose name escapes me at the moment. Where would I look it up? Earlier in this book. I would look it up and you can see the list. There's six that were born to him at Hebron with six different women, and then a somewhat larger number, 8 or 9 or 10, in Solomon's in the next group. Okay? So, it's his half-sister Tamar. It says he was so obsessed, that's my translation, yours says tormented, that it made him ill. Since she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it was impossible to, my translation uses a powerful word here, do anything with her. Mm-hmm. Now, I need to know how yours renders this.
I do like one of the things that says he was so upset, which is not the best word, over his half-sister, that he made himself sick.
I think that this is why different translations are helpful, to sort of go back and forth between them. Obsessed that he made himself sick.
He wasn't sick, he just made himself sick.
Made himself sick. Verse 3. Mine starts out with the word but. Does yours start out with the word but?
Now.
Yours says now. Mine says but. But. It looks hopeless, but. That's, I think, the way you should read this. But Amnon had a friend. Right?
Jonadab.
Who is this? Jonadab or Jonadab. Which one are we going to agree on today? Jonadab? Let's agree on Jonadab for today and we change it next week. Son of a man's name is given there, Shimeah. And who's he identified as? David's brother. So who's that? Who is this Jonadab?
Half cousin.
I'm sorry, we got to just wait. This is getting complicated here. You can do it. You can do it. Okay, Shimeah is Amnon's uncle. Right?
Yeah.
Who's Jonadab?
His cousin.
That's his cousin. His first cousin, I think, is what you would say.
Right.
Okay? My wife has double first cousins. Do you guys know what that means?
Yes. Two brothers married.
The sister of her daddy married the brother of her mama, double first cousin. Right? Life is complicated in her family.
That's in my family, too.
Your family too, yeah. That's interesting. They're just first cousins as far as we know. Okay. Interestingly enough, Joab gets involved in this as well. If you keep watching, you'll find Joab is in this network of cousins as well. I'll leave that for a little later. Amnon had a friend. He's a cousin, but the word friend is used instead of that. And it says at the end of the verse that he had a certain characteristic. What was the characteristic?
Very shrewd.
Crafty, yours says. Shrewd, mine says.
Very clever man.
Clever. Once again, I think crafty and shrewd, subtle. Subtle and clever are kind of neutral words. Crafty and shrewd imply what? A little bit... not so good. Is that right? Now, I would like to challenge you. What are you supposed to remember so far?
Rabbah
of the Ammonites. You're supposed to remember that. You're supposed to have a place to hang that so it's there when you need it, right? Okay, the next thing I want you to do is I want you to remember Jonadab. Because Jonadab shows up in a startling place much, much later in this story. If you've read it, you know this, of course. Right, Dennis? Right. But if you haven't read it, you might not know this yet. He was a very shrewd man. Son of the king, he said. Tell me why, morning after morning, you look so worn.
Agony.
Agony, yours.
Angered.
Haggard. Oh, what a great word. I didn't see that one. Merle Haggard. Depressed, yours says. I like Haggard. I really do like Haggard. Son of the king, tell me why morning after morning you look so haggard. Won't you please tell me? And Amnon replied, I'm in love with Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And Jonadab hands him a plan. And the plan is crafty, and the plan is shrewd, and the plan is subtle, and the plan is, what was your word?
Clever.
And the plan is evil personified. Jumping ahead so as to protect tender ears. He tricks Tamar into coming to him by pretending to be even sicker than he had made himself, I think was your translation. She comes and treats him. He drives away all the servants. And then he takes her and rapes her. And just before he rapes her, she says something. What does she say?
She says, "Ask the king to give it."
This is verse 12. "No, brother," she says, "do not force me. This is not the way to behave in Israel. Do not do anything so disgraceful. Wherever should I go? I should be marked with this shame while you would become disgraced in Israel. Why not go speak to the king? He will not refuse to give me to you." And the end of verse 14 says, "But he would not listen to her." He refused to listen to her, and he raped her. I do not know how to explain this, but I will tell you, in observation, I believe it's often true. Read verse 15. What happened?
He hated her
with a hate that was greater than the love with which he had loved her. The moment he had his way, he no longer wanted her at all. In fact, he wanted her gone. And he threw her out. And she tore her clothes, her beautiful clothes, her gorgeous clothes. For all we can tell, she may have been one of the few daughters David had. So she would have had beautiful clothes. She tore her clothes and went away, this is verse 19, crying aloud as she went. And she meets her brother Absalom, who says, I'm at verse 20. He doesn't say, "Have you been with Amnon?" What does he say? "Has Amnon been with you?" I think there is a meaning in the order in which things are said. "Has your brother Amnon been with you? Sister, be quiet. He is your brother. Do not take this matter to heart." Good heavenly days. Tamar, however... Mine uses the word however. Does yours use the word however?
So.
Yours uses so. However sort of implies he told her to do this and she couldn't do it. She went back to her brother's Absalom's house inconsolable. Verse 21. What happened?
David was hearing it.
Mine does not say when David heard the story. Does yours say?
Yes.
When David heard the story? Mine says, when David heard the whole story. He hadn't heard part of it. He's heard everything. He was?
Angry.
Angry at what? Angry at who? Doesn't say. It doesn't say. It says he was angry. But that word "but" shows up again. What does it say? He had no wish to harm his son Amnon, whom he loved, because Amnon was his firstborn. So what does David do about this? Let me use the proper word, crime. Starts with N, don't search too hard. Nothing. Not a thing. Nada. What does Amnon do? We don't know. What does Absalom do? He withdraws any interaction with Amnon. He would not so much as speak to Amnon. And it says he hated Amnon for having done this. There's point one. Lust turns to loathing among David's children. The subtitle is, and David doesn't do a thing about it. My second point starts with the first words of verse 23. My second point starts with the words 2 years later. Does yours start with the words 2 years later?
Yes.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, what does yours say in verse 38? I'm skipping forward.
Absolutely.
Stayed there how long?
3 years.
3 years. Turn to chapter 14, verse 28. How much time? 2 years. Chapter 15, verse 1. It simply says after this. It doesn't give a time period. How about chapter 15, verse 7?
4 years.
4 years. This thing's going to play out over a decade. This is going to play out over a decade in the next two chapters. And what I'd like to do is, in the next 25 minutes, cover a decade. We won't quite cover the decade. We're going to cover almost all of it, not quite all of it. Okay? So, I'm back to verse 23 of chapter 13. 2 years later, Absalom had his sheep shearers at Baal-Hazor, which is near Ephraim, and he invited all the king's sons to the sheep shearing celebration. Absalom went to the king and said, "Now, sir, your servant has the sheep shearers. You have the sense of the sheep shearers moving around from place to place, and now they're at my place. Will the king and his retinue be pleased to come with your servant?" And the king replies, "I don't think so. We must not all come and be a burden to you." And though Absalom was insistent, he would not go, but dismissed him. That's fascinating in itself. I think I'm going to leave it uncommented on, other than just flag it. There's something about the way David is treating Absalom that's a signal of some kind. He dismissed him. Absalom persisted, "Then at least let my brother Amnon come with us." The king's radar is up, but nowhere near high enough. "Why should he go with you?" But on Absalom's insistence, he let Amnon and all the king's sons to go with him. The word "let" is fascinating in that sentence. It almost looks like the king's sons need permission from David before they get together, before they go someplace, before they do something. And I don't know that I can make sense out of that, other than just flag something's funny in David's family. You got to get daddy's permission, but daddy's really not having much to do with you. So Amnon goes. And verse 28 is one of the more chilling verses you'll find in the whole of Scripture. What is Absalom planning? Cold-blooded murder by proxy. He's going to have his servants do the deed. Who are they going to kill? In front of? Not everybody. That's not specific enough. In front of who? Who's coming to the banquet? All of the brothers and Amnon, to be sure. So all the king's sons are present. Verse 29 starts off in as it's almost blank. No emotion. Absalom's servants treated Amnon as Absalom had ordered. That's all it says. They treated him as he had ordered. How had he ordered them to treat him? They ordered him to kill him. And that's what they did. How many sons of David were there? Well, there were six in the first group. There were 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 in the second group. You know, we don't know how old they all are. But there's some that were old enough and big enough and strong enough. Absalom wasn't the oldest one. Amnon was. There was number 2. There was number 4, 5, and 6 plus all the others. Right? They presumably had some of their servants too. What's their response?
They leave.
They flee. What's that? There's another signal. Now, do you see the accumulating signals? Do you make anything of them? Apparently not.
Apparently they don't do anything without David's permission.
That's half of it, I think. But there's another half. There seems to be
a lot of dysfunction.
Absolutely a lot of dysfunction. But there is a fear of Absalom. David doesn't want to be on Absalom's turf. No, no, no. You go ahead. I think I'll just stay here. You have a sense that David doesn't want to be alone on Absalom's turf. And doesn't exactly want his children to be there. And the moment Absalom and his servants act, the other brothers, instead of overwhelming them, you would have thought the numbers would have at least been equal with the servants and the sons. They all take to their means of conveyance and they ride off into the sunset. What was the means of conveyance, just as long as we're here?
Mules.
They all had a mule. Okay.
You would think, as sons of the king, they would have horses.
Well, I would have thought maybe they would have horses. In fact, I'd like to put another flag here. How many flags we got so far? What was the first one? Rabbah of the Ammonites. That was the capital city of Ammon. Ammon. Right? And what's the second flag?
Jonadab.
Jonadab. Sorry. Jonadab, who was the first cousin of and a clever, shrewd, crafty, I forget what the third one, the fourth one was. Okay, I want to put a flag here. Every one of them seems to have a means of conveyance where they don't have to walk. Now, the means of conveyance is a mule. I would have thought it would have been horses, but okay. How big is a mule? At least as big as a horse, at least the ones I've been around. Do you remember the one that I was around? Do you remember his name? I told you on one day, I don't know if you remember, Jehoshaphat. Best mule I've ever known. Gave us rides all over the place for years. Okay? The king's sons all leapt to their feet, mounted their mules, and fled. While they were on the road, word reached David. What was the word? He killed all of your sons. And David rents his clothes, goes into grief and mourning. And then, verse 32, what happens?
Jonadab.
First flag is now down. We've used it. Who speaks? The very guy who caused the problem in the first place, or at least was the spark. I'm not going to remove the guilt from Amnon, but Jonadab was certainly the one that showed him how. Jonadab speaks up, and what does he say? They're not all done, then. What does he say?
Only
Ammon. How did he know that? I'm sorry, you read this, right? You did ask yourself this question, right? How did he know this? This was part of the plan. And as far as I can tell, Jonadab never gets his upcomings. He never gets the reward that you ought to get for this kind of treachery in the king's family. Jonadab says, oh, it's only Ammon. For Absalom has been promising himself to do this since the day when Amnon raped his sister Tamar. So my lord the king must not imagine that all the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon's dead. Now what's he just said to the king? He's let the king be upset that all of his sons are dead. And now what has the king experienced? The relief that all but one are still fine. And what does that do to his anger over what Absalom has done? It tempers it. It draws it down. He has allowed the king to go on a roller coaster. David is clever himself. David is insightful himself, and he seems never, by the Bible record, he seems never to have figured out what Jonadab just did to him. The man on sentry duty looked up, saw a large troop coming down the road. The sentry came to tell the king, I've seen some people coming. Verse 35, what does Jonadab say about that group? How does he know that? He doesn't unless he's a conspirator. But somehow David hasn't figured that out.
Now, if he's a conspirator, who's he conspiring with?
So he's conspiring with Amnon in the first case and conspiring with Absalom in this. Good Lord, this guy's getting around. He had scarcely finished speaking, verse 36, when the king's son arrived and wept aloud. The king and his retinue all wept aloud as well. And verse 37 tells you, Absalom is gone. Where did he go? He went to Talmai, the son of, starts with A, the king of. Why did he go there?
Geshur was somewhere near.
Somewhere where there was a battle. Well, probably so, but that's not it. Okay, I didn't have you set the proper flags. Actually, come to think of it, I did. You've just forgotten. Amnon was one. Who was his mama? Abigail, I think. Shimei, I think, was number two. And number three was Absalom. Who was his mother? His mother was the daughter of Tamai, the king of Geshur. Where has Absalom gone?
To his
maternal grandfather. He's gone to be with his maternal grandfather. Okay? And verse 37 ends with poignant words. What does it say? The king mourned for who?
His son.
Singular or plural?
Singular.
Which son was he mourning for? Well, the clue is in the next couple of verses. Verse 38, Absalom had gone to Geshur. How long did he stay there?
3 years.
That's the punctuation for the third point. We've now got another 3 years go. So how long has gone by so far since this whole sordid story started? 5 years plus whatever few days it takes for various things to happen. Verse 39, once the king was consoled over Amnon's death, what does it say?
His
anger, yours says the desire to go after, his anger against Absalom, mine uses the word subsided.
Pacified,
yours says. Yours says consoled. That doesn't... Faded. Faded, I think, sounds right. Pacified a little bit. Well, mine says he was consoled over Amnon's death.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking for the other verb. Mine says his anger against Absalom. Mine said subsided. Yours says faded. I think those are good words. Okay, so that puts... Okay. So yours takes it not just the anger subsided, but that a wish for reconciliation began to rise. So yours actually takes it further than that. Okay. Okay. Verse 14. Joab. What does it tell you about Joab?
Chapter 14,
verse 1. What does it tell you about Joab? Son of? Okay, good. So who was Zeruiah? Who is Zeruiah?
I need a chart.
We did need a chart. Who is Zeruiah? Look at the structure, right? So-and-so, son of so-and-so. Who's the so-and-so? The second name. Who does that identify? Oh, come on. David, son of Jesse, son of Obed, son of Boaz and Ruth. Remember that? Right, so who's this guy? I'm setting you up. You know I'm setting you up. But just work with me. Joab's father. It's not Joab's mother. And why is it Joab's mother? Because Joab's mother is part of David's family. And I'm not sure, but I think it's either sister to David or the daughter of one of David's cousins. Maybe that same Shimei that we talked about earlier. Go check it up. Go make your chart and let us know. But I don't think that's his father. I think that's his mother. What did he see? Mine says Joab observed something. What did he see?
The king was
sympathizing yourself. Favorably inclined towards, mine says, who?
Absalom.
Any other words that we need to hear in there? Favorably inclined, sympathizing?
Longing
to see. Okay. Joab then sent to Tekoa, okay, this is the home of the prophet Amos, those of you who know something about Amos, for a specific person, and this specific person is identified by character and gender. What's the gender?
Woman.
Woman. What's the character?
Wise.
Okay.
One and the same,
Kitty says. One and the same, Kitty says. Most of the time, Bill says.
And he instructs her in what to say, and what she ends up saying turns out to be remarkably parallel to what Nathan said. What's the difference? Nathan himself took the risk of saying this, and Nathan was confronting sin. Joab has got a proxy, and the proxy is trying to get David to condone or enable sin. It's not the same. It looks parallel, but it's not. What does she do? She tells a story. Is it true? Maybe so. Maybe he picked a woman so that she would have a story like this to tell. And the story talks about one of her sons killing another son, and they're trying to, now they're looking to kill the other son. Now she's not going to have any sons at all. Won't you do something? And David agrees that, oh yes, this is worth doing. And then she points her finger at the king, and she says, if you've given such wise counsel to me, why don't you give that same counsel to yourself? Okay? It's very interesting, verse 13. Why then has the king, who by giving this verdict has condemned himself, conceived the idea against God's people's interest of not bringing home the son whom he has banished? There's not a more complicated verse in this part of Scripture. You have to sort of walk through this about six times to parse it all out. She's basically saying, you're restoring to me the son who did the offense. Why don't you do that within your own family? Verse 18, verse 19, David says, let me ask you a question. Did Joab put you up to this? And her response is, I can't escape what my lord the king says, either to the right or left. Yes, it was Joab who gave me my orders. He put all these words into your servant's mouth. Your servant Joab did this to approach the matter indirectly, but my Lord has the wisdom of the angel of God. He knows everything that happens on the earth. Is that true? He sure didn't know what Jonadab was doing to him, so no, that's not true.
Which two verses? Eight.
That was 18, 19, 20. By the time I got finished, I was into 20. Verse 21, the king said to Joab, very well, the suit is granted. Go and bring the young man Absalom back. Okay. Verse 24, the king puts a condition on it. What's his condition? He can come back. I won't kill him. But what? I'm not going to be in his presence. What is Absalom's position then? The Bible doesn't say clearly, but it's certainly strongly implied. What's his position? We have a name for it. Nope. Outcast is not, it's a good word. Outcast would say he's out there somewhere. He's coming back. House arrest. House arrest. You could almost use the word quarantine, but that has a medical context. He's basically being told, I don't ever want to see his face. The king can go wherever the king wants. If the king doesn't want to see his face, and the king can go wherever he wants, where does Absalom have to be? In one place where the king never goes. He's under house arrest. Okay, verse 28. What does it say? Mine, I think, says in verse 28, Absalom lived in Jerusalem for 2 years without being received by the king. Is that right? But that comes right after a little commentary about Absalom. What's the commentary about Absalom? What does it tell you about Absalom? I'm looking at verse 25, 26, 27. Mine doesn't say good looking. Mine says beautiful, which is a term usually applied not to men.
It says he was praised for his good looks.
I come from Lake Wobegon, Garrison Keillor says, where the women are handsome, the men are good looking. Is that what it says?
From the soles. Okay.
What does it say about his beauty? From the soles?
From
mine just says,
his feet to the crown of his head, there's nothing wrong with him.
And then it spends a whole verse talking about what?
His hair.
His hair. Keep an eye on that. Were you in the 8 o'clock service?
Yes.
You already know what's coming. The pastor referred to it. There are trees throughout the Bible, he said.
And we're only going to talk about the big three. There was the tree that Zacchaeus climbed. There was the tree of such and such. There was a tree associated with Absalom. So keep your eye on that hair. We don't know for sure it was the hair, but anyway. Said he cut his hair. He shaved it once a year because his hair got too heavy. And it says how heavy it was, and the heaviness is pretty remarkable. I don't remember. And it says he had a family. He had three sons and a daughter. What did he call the daughter?
Tamar.
Oh, my goodness. And what does it say about Tamar? She was good looking. I remember the day that Chip Tarkington was narrating some clips of a football game from James River High School. And the quarterback had thrown a particularly good pass. And Chip Tarkington said over the air, "Boy, he must have a good looking mama." Okay. You guys remember who the quarterback was? It was either Grant or Landon, and he was talking about Kerry. It was sort of a little coded message to his friends at Bon Air. Okay. He lived in 2 years without being received by the king. Verse 29 has a powerful verb. I hope you're keeping track of verbs. I had good English teachers when I was coming along. They didn't tell me how to tell an adverb from an adjective, but boy, do I notice verbs. What's the verb that they use in your translation? Mine says he summoned Joab. Yours says sent for. He did not ask for an audience. He did not request a visit. He summoned him. If you summon somebody and expect them to show up, what does that say about your power relative to their power? Yours is greater. Yours is greater. He summoned Joab, but Joab didn't come. He summoned Joab a second time. Joab didn't come. What does he do then? Arson. Arson. Right? What does he do? Set Joab's crops on fire. Joab notices that. "Why'd you do that?" he says when he comes to visit Absalom. "Well, had to get you here some way." What does that tell you about Absalom? Absalom couldn't go to jail, Joab. What did I say earlier? I think the Bible is saying, under house arrest. Do you see another second reason why I'm saying that? He could not simply go to Joab. He had to get Joab to come to him. "I want to send you to the king to say, why come back from Geshur? It would have been better for me to be there still. I want to be received by the king. If I'm guilty, let him put me to death." So Joab went to the king, told him this. He summoned Absalom, who prostrated himself with his face to the ground before the king. And the king
kissed
him. He has now been pardoned. Okay? Chapter 15. How does yours start? What are the first two words? Yours says in the course of time. Yours says sometime later. Mine says after this. Okay. Absalom is so full of gratitude for David that he lives his life doing all the things that will please David. Right? Wrong. Big time wrong. And that's where we're going to have to stop for next time. Now, we've had to do this a few times, and this is another week when we're going to have to do this. Are there any highlights in here at all? Are there any points in here where something really good is going on? Are there any points in here that are really good? I'm struggling to find them.
The main thing, David never took care of his business, never took care of things.
That's what it looks like. What I think you're getting this week is a backdrop against which some pretty remarkable things may come. But this particular week, I'm not sure anybody looks good. Joab is manipulating the king. Jonadab is really manipulating the king. And the king is being told, "You're like an angel of God. Nothing happens on earth that you don't see it." No way that's true. And yet, David seems to have a forgiving spirit. Now here's the flag. I want you to put a flag on this moment where David kisses Absalom. What does he express in that kiss?
Forgiveness
and restoration, as if nothing had ever been done wrong. Okay?
The day is going to come where that comes back and it reaches full flower, and you sit there and you think, I can't believe that. And Joab expresses your thoughts. He looks at the king and says, I can't believe you're doing this. Absalom, you're doing this? No, we haven't gotten there yet. But what am I encouraging you to do?
Read
ahead. How far?
To the end.
Not the end of the chapter, the end of the book. Okay? Because if you do this, you're going to have it. Okay? What are you watching for?
Flags.
Yeah, what have we flagged so far? We flagged Jonadab, but we've taken that flag down because we got to that spot.
Rabbah.
Of the Ammonites. And what else? His love and forgiveness and pardon of Absalom. And what else? Seems like there was one more.
No one has to walk.
Yeah, all the mules.
Yeah.
All the mules. Everybody's riding mules. Right? Keep an eye on those things as you go forward. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for today. We thank you for letting us begin to see the human story that sits inside some of the words on the pages of Scripture. And we start to realize the same kinds of emotions, passions, attitudes, and actions that we see around us were sure going on then. In so many ways, that world is unlike ours at all. But we start looking closely, and human nature hasn't changed. The same kinds of emotions are there. So we recognize in ourselves the ability for us to go off the tracks. And we pray that your Spirit would keep us close. Keep the tracks, keep the steps ahead of us lit, where we can at least see the first few steps in the direction we should take. And give us the courage and the wisdom to follow in the direction that you lead. For we ask all this in your Son's name.